calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
Well, they are nothing if not bold in four states now. Indiana, Georgia, Tennessee, and Ohio. Four states now. Legislators have already put forward legislation banning abortion, which, of course, is illegal given the Roe v. Wade decision. But they're expecting that by the time these bills are voted on and signed into law by the governors of these four states, that Sam Alito will have been put on the Supreme Court and will have struck down Roe v. Wade. So Republicans in Ohio, Indiana, Georgia, and Tennessee have already introduced legislation making abortion illegal in those states. They're nothing if not audacious. We'll get into that a little bit more. Duke University professor casting doubts about Thursday's audio tape on Osama bin Laden's veracity, shall we say. He's a skeptic of it, and I want to share with you his thoughts and mine on that a little later on in the program. First, however, we have with us Chuck Morse. Chuck Morse is a congressional candidate in the 4th Congressional District of Massachusetts. He's running as the Republican against Barney Frank for the United States House of Representatives. Chuck, his website, Morse for Congress, F-O-R, Congress. Chuck is also an old talk show host, and I've known Chuck for a couple of years as a result of that. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Nice to be with you.
Good to have you back with us. You are of the opinion, Chuck, that the Republicans are just going to kick butt in 2006.
I don't know about kick butt, but obviously conventional wisdom has it that the party in power, whether it be Democrat or Republican, in the second term of a presidency usually loses some ground in the midterm election.
Were you referring to the Democratic Party when you said Democrat Party?
That's right.
There is, just as an FYI, Chuck, there is no such thing as a Democrat Party. There's a Democratic Party.
That's a good old-fashioned expression.
No, it's true. I mean, it's true. I realize that Lee Atwater came up with this idea that Democrat, and if you emphasize the last syllable, it sounds like rat, was a good idea, and so Republicans are taught not to say Democratic Party, but I have this religious obsession now that I have to correct Republicans when they say that. So
not at all, and also, on the other hand, if you say Democratic Party, it implies that somehow other groups are not democratic.
But it's the name of the party, and it has been forever. I mean, it's the longest-lasting political party in the history of the world, and it's called the Democratic Party.
That's interesting. I never heard that before.
Yeah, it is. It was founded by Thomas Jefferson. It's more than 200 years old. It's longer than any political party has ever lasted.
Now, I think Thomas Jefferson was a Republican, but
it was actually called the Democratic Republican Party when he started it.
That's right. Well,
and they dropped the word Republican from their name during the administration of Andrew Jackson.
I think that today's Democratic Party was probably more like the Federalists.
No, they were the enemies, the incredible enemies of the Federalists.
But the Federalists were the party of big government back then, and the Democrats are the party of big government today. But, Tom, we could debate history. My point is that I think this midterm election is going to not necessarily favor the Republicans, but I think we're going to at least hold our own. We very well may pick up a couple of seats, and there are several factors I would contend are involved. On the positive side of it, I think the Republicans are coming into the election with an economy that is starting to get better. It's not getting worse. There are developments in a positive way.
I'm assuming you noticed what happened with Ford this morning, Chuck Morse.
Even having noticed that, generally speaking, the indications are that things are getting a little bit
better. I mean, here we have 25,000 good-paying jobs are going to be vanishing, and to the extent that they may be replaced, they'll be replaced with either lousy-paying jobs, Walmart-type jobs, or maybe those people will be able to make that amount of money or even more working for Halliburton over in Iraq as private contractors. But is that really the kind of economy that we want to have?
Either that or I think Toyota, I understand, is going to be picking up some of the slack.
And isn't that marvelous? All the profit that Toyota makes goes where?
Goes
to Japan.
It goes into the pockets of their shareholders.
I happen to own
a couple of stocks of Toyota in my retirement fund. Anybody can own the Toyota Corporation today. You just go out and buy the shares. You know, the economy it's not quite as cut and dried as it used to be. Now working people, poor working people, working lower class people can own shares in Fidelity. You can just, for $100 a month, you can own a piece of Toyota and you can profit. So Toyota.
Well, you can own a small piece of Toyota because the Japanese law will not allow foreigners to own more than
49%. 49%. There you go. Well, but also on the other side, besides the economy, I think that the national security question remains a vital one. People are concerned over threats to the United States from Bin Laden. I heard you say you don't think that tape is real, and I think that's an interesting conspiracy.
No, I think it's real. I just don't think it's current.
Well,
that's
the kind of conspiracy theory that I don't know where to even begin. But the point of the matter is that I don't think it's disputed that.
So let me get this straight, Chuck. I just want to clarify this. Help me understand this.
Yeah.
George W. Bush had over 56, actually, according to the 9/11 Commission, 56 specific warnings that Bin Laden was going to strike in the United States, including warnings that mentioned the use of hijacked aircraft, and including warnings that identified buildings in Washington and New York City. He received on August 6th a presidential daily briefing saying Bin Laden determined to strike in the United States and extended his vacation to be the longest presidential vacation in history, and even then was afraid to go back to Washington, D.C., went to Florida instead. They completely dropped the ball on this thing. They had the military stood down during that day. I mean, you had terrorists flying these planes around for a couple of hours with no response. The Bush administration had the biggest single failure of national security in the history of the planet happen on their watch, and these guys are going to run, and you guys are going to run on national security?
Well, Tom, I suppose you and I could debate ad infinitum the mistakes or successes of both the 8 months of the Bush administration and the 8 years of the Clinton administration, but that's not the issue that's salient to voters. The issue that's salient to people now is the current confrontation with the international terrorist infrastructure. And I don't think the Democrats exactly have the kind of record that make people comfortable, especially in the midst of these kinds of threats.
Well, the Democrats have had no power since 9/11, but since 9/11, has Bush secured the cargo that's in the airplanes that we're flying on? No. Has he secured the nuclear power plants around the country? No. Has he secured our chemical plants? No. Has he secured rerouted our, toxic materials through our major cities on our rail lines? No. I mean, so many of the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, they're just ignoring.
Well, Tom, you and I could, again, debate these. I think that most people have a sense of security knowing that the Bush administration versus, let's say, Gore or Kerry are, in fact, dealing with the international terrorist threat.
You really believe that, Chuck?
Yes, I do, and I think that's going to be borne out on Election Day. Given that fact, the national security issue along with the economy issue, I think that people are more secure with Republicans in control than Democrats at this particular juncture. Now, if we were dealing with different sets of circumstances, more conventional sets of circumstances, then yes, I think conventional wisdom would have it that the party in power would lose ground. I just don't think that that's the case this time around.
So here we've got these guys for two years, from 2001 to 2003, they were hacking into the computers, over 5,000 computer files of the Democrats, a confidential Democratic strategy memos about President Bush's judicial nominees. The GOP used these memos to shape their own plans and leak some to the media. This is a major felony. It's never been investigated because Congress won't allow it to be investigated. The Dr. Detroit thing, the Memogate thing. We've got John Ashcroft blowing it in the only prosecution for post 9/11 prosecution for terrorism he did, these three Detroit guys, that got overturned because he'd screwed the case up so badly. You've got this the leaking of, outing of a CIA agent. You've got members of the administration under indictment. You've got members of the administration who have pled guilty. You got Jack Abramoff, who has given money exclusively to Republicans. Not one penny of Abramoff's money has gone to any Democrats. And
that's not true.
It is true.
Well, what about Patrick Kennedy here in Rhode Island? He took $50,000.
Not from Abramoff.
Yes, he did.
No, the argument
that
is...
Not only that, but he refuses to return it because he says to us the other day, well, this was because I'm trying to defend the rights of Indians.
Let's be accurate. He didn't take it from Abramoff. He took it from one of Abramoff's clients.
Okay, you want to split his.
It is not splitting hairs, Chuck. It's a world of difference. In many cases, those clients of Abramoff's were clients of Abramoff's before they hired Abramoff.
She took $100,000, according to what I've heard.
Not from Abramoff. There's not one single Democrat who took one penny from Abramoff.
And the problem with the Abramoff thing is that because he represents Native American tribes, and this is a law that needs to be changed, they are not bound, or he wasn't bound, by the same lobbyist rules that other lobbyists are bound by because Native Americans have certain sovereign rights. They've got special
rights. So he could hustle even more money for Republicans. And
but either way, I mean, the point is that that's...
But you think in the face of all this, the Republicans are going to do just fine?
Excuse me?
You think in the face of all this stuff,
I think
Tom DeLay going down in flames, Medicare not working?
I do.
You really do? Okay.
Yes,
well,
sir.
If people want more information about Chuck, his candidacy, and his perspective, Morse for Congress, MorseForCongress.com is the website. Chuck, you want to talk to a couple of our listeners?
Sure.
Yeah, you want, stick around over the break, and we'll take a few calls here. If you'd like to speak with Chuck Morse, 866-440-8466. It's 16 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
There you go. Welcome back, my friends. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman radio program, telling the truth to multinational corporations and some Republicans. We'd really rather you didn't hear. Our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-MACS, smalldog.com, the website. Talking with Chuck Morse. Chuck Morse is running against Barney Frank in Massachusetts for Congress. He's a Republican candidate. Morse for Congress, MorseForCongress.com is his website. Chuck, and also to our listeners, our telephone number, 866-440-8466. This segment ends hard at 27:50. 27:20 is when the music will begin. And once it does, it's like a machine. I can't stop it. So just, you know, give you a heads up and also our listeners. I'm going to kind of get out of the way here and just let you talk to our listeners. I'm asking my listeners, keep your comments or your questions short, and I'm asking you, Chuck, to keep them short, too, because our lines are slammed, and we only have about 6 minutes, okay?
Sure.
Chuck, you with me? Okay. Let's go for it. Andy in Buffalo, New York, you're live with Chuck Morse.
First of all, Tom, I want to tell you I like your show. Second of all, Chuck, I hope you lose. I think you're disillusioned, and I want you to know that you're supporting a commander-in-chief who is great on national defense, you say, right? Well, if it was up to him, we wouldn't have anybody in Vietnam at all because he didn't show up when it was his turn. How could you defend? How could you defend somebody that's pretty much a coward?
But you know, in my district here in Massachusetts,
National Guard.
In my district in
Massachusetts, not a word you say. I don't believe a word of it.
Okay, I gotta let Chuck respond, Andy. Thanks.
Thank you. In my district in Massachusetts, I am trying to offer an alternative to the all-liberal, all-cookie-cutter Democrat legislators we've had here in the state for a quarter century.
Democratic.
And Democratic, thank you. And, all right, let's not get nitpicky. Anyway, I don't want to confuse the Democratic Party with Democratic principles. That's why.
Okay.
But, that's what the Democrats, speaking of Democratic, that's what the Democratic approach is all about. I think that my views and my aspirations more clearly reflect working people in my district, people like me, people who pay taxes, people who are trying to get the government off their back, people who care about the country not being attacked by foreign terrorists operating from within.
I got it. Let's keep it short, Chuck, and we'll move along. Lee in Houston, Texas. Lee, short one for Chuck.
Hey, Tom?
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, buddy. I just want to say thanks for being there. I just make it real quick, Chuck. I think a lot of people are seeing through this stuff. You know, the Bush administration has expanded the government 33% since he's taken office, and he spent more money than the last 45 presidents combined. $3 trillion in the last 5 years, giving tax breaks to billionaires, man. We are sick of this crap, period.
Okay. Chuck, your response?
Well, I mean, of all issues, I think it's ironic to hear Democrats and liberals complain about government spending. But actually, I do think that this is one area that I'd like to see more fiscal conservatism on the part of both the administration and the Republican Congress. Yes, I see Congress reduce the size of government in all areas, make it more efficient, make social services more reachable to real people rather than to liberal bureaucrats.
Okay. Dr. Otter in Atlanta, Georgia. You're live with Chuck Morse.
Hi, Chuck. I was listening to you talk about Democrat versus Democratic, et cetera. And my question is, has President Bush made it fashionable and acceptable to run for national office with no knowledge at all of American political history?
Well, I mean, that's the kind of a question like, you know, do you beat your wife? I mean,
do you still beat your wife?
President Bush doesn't decide who runs the public office. I decide, the people decide, citizens decide. I mean, we run for office, we present our ideas, we debate our opponents, and the people decide.
Well, I think his point was it seems like there's a tragic loss of knowledge of American history. I would say that that's on both sides of the aisle. Jay in Atlanta, Georgia, you're live with Chuck Morris.
Mr. Morris, you dismissed Tom's laundry list of negligence by the Bush administration before 9/11. Hypothetically speaking, if this was a year and a half ago and Wesley Clark was the Democratic nominee, would you honestly tell us that Bush would instill more confidence in the public than the former Supreme Allied Commander who was endorsed by 55 ambassadors, who John McCain said his insight into the nature of alliance warfare deserves wide readership on both sides of the Atlantic? Bush was more confident than that guy.
First of all, I don't dismiss Tom's laundry list. I think that this short program is too the type of venue that we can't possibly address every single thing when you have a litany of things brought up. And they're all legitimate points, and I'd love to respond to all of them, but we just don't have the time.
Yeah, we don't. We have less than a minute left, in fact. Marie in Vashon Island, Washington. Hey, Marie.
Hi. I want to comment on Chuck's statement that the Democrats are the party of big government. I think this government has gotten much larger under this administration. And then he said that people want government off our back and that he thinks that they are the party to do that. I think they have interfered in our lives much more than anyone else has.
Yeah.
They're spying on us. They're
telling
us who we can have sex with, when we can die. I just don't see that that's not interfering in our lives.
There you go, Chuck.
Well, first of all, the Democratic Party philosophically is the party of authoritarian big government. They believe in government as a redemptive force. The Republican ideal, maybe we don't live up to the ideal, is that individuals, that rights come from the individual and the government is limited.
Then why are the Republicans spying on us? Why are they trying to mess with Terry Schiavo's?
All right, I'll answer that question.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry. We're out of time. It's got to be a rhetorical question. You can learn more about Chuck, and thanks a lot, Marie, for calling. You can learn more about Chuck's candidacy at morseforcongress.com. Chuck, thanks for being with us on the program today.
Anytime.
Good talking with you. It's 27 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the True People's Radio.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
What do you call a tax cut for the wealthiest 1%?
Homeland Security.
What do you call the other 99 who can't make the rent?
Homeland Security.
A lovely little bit of phraseology for all the neocon men when they announce a massive deficit. Something that they consider preface it. What do you call the cable guy who's rifling through your mail?
Homeland Security.
What do you call it when you get arrested for clipping a nail?
Homeland Security.
And welcome back, my friends. 34 minutes past the hour. Our quote for the day from John Kennedy: our problems are man-made, therefore they may be solved by man. A man can be as big as he wants. No problem of human destiny is beyond human beings. And there is always hope. There is always hope. So, I'm sorry, I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do with that. Anyhow, welcome back to the program, 35 minutes past the hour. Tom in Minneapolis, Minnesota on the line. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Morning, Tom. You know, at least I have a little more time since I don't have to rush through here.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chuck made two specious claims regarding Democratic Party, and the first one was party of big government, and the second one was that the Dems have no record on national security.
Yeah, let's see. The Democrats won World War One. The Democrats won World War Two. The Democrats won the Korean War. What am I missing here?
Yeah, and then up to the present, Clinton overthrew a brutal dictator and terrorist, Milosevic, and liberated Muslims. And at the same time, he also gave us an expanding economy record because he inherited the crap from Papa Bush and Reagan, just like FDR inherited the Republican Great Depression. So that belies, you know, that. But also on this party of the big government, it's not a question of how big or small. It has to do with the role of government. And these guys like to put laws in the bedroom, and we like to put laws in the public boardroom. And it's private versus public.
Yeah, yeah. Well said.
I wanted to make that point. You know?
Yeah, well, you did, and you did it very well. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good hearing from you. Joe in Provo, Utah. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks, Tom, and for elucidating those points. It's a really chilling thing for me when I hear that kind of disregard for these illegal activities that have taken place. When it comes to those kind of things, it shouldn't be about a debate. It should be something that's taken into some forum, either in a judiciary forum or into the hearings in the House or Senate.
Yeah.
You know, and these guys are bringing all these illegal things into a public forum where they don't belong. It's like going to the Salem witch trials or something. All of a sudden we're having this.
Yeah, it's a little spooky. And here's the amazing thing. I mean, I try to get conservatives on this. We have plenty of, you know, progressives and liberals who come on the program and share ideas and things, and you know, that's fine. But I also try and get conservatives to come on the program because I think it's important, A, that people hear what they have to say so that they understand what their agenda really is, and B, so that they hear and find effective ways to win the water cooler wars, to rebut their talking points so that, you know, when they're standing around the water cooler at work, they can do it. And I think it was just great the way, you know, I threw the lines open to our callers to talk to Chuck, and the lines were just slammed, and I'm going to start doing that more with conservative callers and let our listeners talk to them as well.
And it's really excellent that you do it, and I'll tell you, I'm running for office out in Utah, and you're a great place for me to start really building my perspective and so forth. So,
well, good on you, Joe. If you've got a website, if you're running for office and you're progressive, feel free to give it a plug right now.
Yeah, it's Joe Labonte. I'm on Being Human Party in Utah, a U.S. Senate candidate.
And the website is?
BeingHumanParty.com.
BeingHumanParty.com. Great. Thanks a lot, Joe. Good to hear from you.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Matt in Gainesville, Florida. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to comment. I guess I think part of Chuck's confidence about how well the Republicans, he's predicting how well they're going to do in the midterms, has a lot to do with the voting machine tampering that they've been instrumenting over the past few years, and especially in 2004's presidential election.
Well, I think it's not just that. They also have hired companies to go into cities all over the United States and set up register here to vote to tables, and you register to vote, and if you check that you're a Democrat, they throw away your registration, and then when you show up to vote, your vote doesn't get counted. They have also illegally purged. I mean, just in the state of Ohio, over 100,000 people were purged from the voting rolls in the months before the election, the vast majority of them in African-American communities, just like they did in Florida. The systematic, methodical way that they go about a whole variety of, you know, it goes beyond even voter fraud or vote tampering. Election theft, really, is what it's all about, is breathtaking. And now, of course, as you point out, the problems with the voting machines, I don't think anybody, after what happened in Leon County, Florida, I believe it was, can deny that these voting machines are easily hacked, easily tamperable, that elections can be changed, and that it ain't a good thing.
Well, not right. They make sure that they get grassroots movements going on in all of the contestable counties, and they ensure that the Republican districts have plenty of machines for everybody, and that the Democratic districts, traditionally Democratic, have very few machines, and those don't work very well.
Yeah, the redistricting and everything else. Yep. Good point, Matt. I appreciate it. Thanks for the call from Gainesville, Florida. Jerry in Reading, Pennsylvania. Hey, Jerry, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Tom.
Hi.
Essentially, it's just, when are we going to be able to go forward in this country? I mean, the guys on the right scream at the guys on the left. The guys on the left scream at the guys on the right. But nobody hears anybody else, and nothing gets done as a result.
Well, I think, Jerry, you've identified one of the real tragedies of the way that network news and in particular handles these kinds of issues. Because the Democrats, for example, for a long time, like 70 years, have been working to protect Social Security. It was in 1947 when Harry Truman first proposed national health care, single-payer, fully funded national health care program. Democrats have been working hard to protect unions and union rights. And, for example, we just saw now in West Virginia with two mine disasters, one after the other, the first defense, the best defense for mine safety is a unionized workforce, because when the people in the workforce have some say in the workplace in which they work, they're the ones who are on the ground. They're the ones who are looking around. They're the ones who are going to spot safety problems. And traditionally, it's been the unions, the United Mine Workers Union, that has been at the forefront of making mines safer places. And so now you got the governor of West Virginia saying, oh, we're going to pass some laws. No, just, stop union busting. I think that the Democrats have been very proactive for a long, long time, for at least 70 years, very proactive and very positive and very forward-thinking and forward-looking. And tragically, a lot of that doesn't get into the media. You're right, Jerry.
It's a horrible situation we're in. I'm 40 years old. I've never seen a more divided electorate in this country. And it's, you know what? It's disgusting.
Yeah. And it is the campaign strategy of Lee Atwater, whose protege, Karl Rove, has continued it, a campaign strategy for which Lee Atwater in his deathbed apologized and begged Rove not to carry on, and he has. It's the politics of personal destruction and the politics of tearing the country apart, and of the two sides not even talking to each other, frankly, which is also tragic. Another reason why I try to bring a little dialogue into this program. Jerry, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. I just want to get back to the news a little bit here before we have to take a break in just a minute. The four states now. Get this, four states, Georgia, Ohio, Indiana, and Tennessee, have submitted laws. Republican legislators in four states have submitted laws in their state legislatures outlawing abortion in those states. Why? Because they believe that when Sam Alito gets on the court, he's going to strike down Roe v. Wade. He and John Roberts and Scalia and Thomas, and all they'll need then is one more vote, are going to strike down Roe v. Wade, and that'll be the end of that. And I'm telling you, if we don't filibuster this guy, the telephone number, 888-355-3588, is the toll-free number for your senator. Just call, and if you don't even know who your senator is, just tell them what state you're from. Every state has two senators, and every citizen of the United States, except those who live in Washington, D.C., have one member of Congress. And if you live in Washington, D.C., you have a non-voting representative in Congress. But it's the members of Congress, the members of the House of Representatives, they have no say in who gets on the Supreme Court. It's just the Senate. And so you have two senators in your state. And if you have a Republican senator, call them and say, hey, break with your party. I mean, this is what I said when I called Senator Smith, Gordon Smith's office here in Oregon. If Gordon Smith is trying to present himself as being a rational, moderate Republican in the state of Oregon, then he should vote against Alito, because Alito is not a Republican and is not a conservative. He's an extremist. He's a right-wing extremist. And he's going to take this country in a direction that, frankly, we haven't seen since the 1905 Lochner decision, and we don't want to see again. We don't want that mindset running this country. We've got way too much, frankly, with Scalia, Thomas, and Roberts on the bench. Way too much. And if, of course, you're speaking with a Democratic member of Congress, then say the same thing that I said to my Senator Ron Wyden, which is, with Ron Wyden, I thanked him for being one of the first four senators to come out and say that he would vote against Alito, and encouraged him to participate in a filibuster, if not initiate it, in a filibuster of this candidate. And I think, frankly, a filibuster may actually be successful. It actually may be successful. And if the Republicans try to pull the nuclear option, if they try to change the Senate rules to do away with the institution of the filibuster and thus drive through Alito, they're going to pay a terrible price for that, both politically in the polls in 2006 and 2008, and when Democrats take power. I mean, then there'll be no check on power. And frankly, I don't think that's a good thing for either party. I think that 60-vote rule, that six-tenths the requirement is, three-fifths requirement is a very important one. It's 45 minutes past the hour. The pill that will help you escape the matrix. The Tom Hartman Program. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me, can't get fooled again.
People think I'm a moron. What if they only knew? Except for my evil genius. And I can be stupid whenever I need to, yeah. In my midnight confessions, I reveal my imperial secrets.
Yes, George W. Bush, revealing his imperial secrets in his Midnight Confessions. Welcome back, my friends. 9 minutes before the hour, just coming up on it. Here on the Tom Hartman Program, you're in the middle of the vast, radical, middle conspiracy. Take no imitations, my friends. 1-866-440-8466, our phone number. John in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Oh, hello, Tom. I just want to get back to something you were talking about last week, which was the public financing of elections.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think that, honestly, that should be like, you know, the Bush's Johnny One Note when it comes to cut taxes. And I think the Democrats should be the same thing on this public financing of elections.
I agree with you. The problem is that there are factions. There is a large faction within the Democratic Party, the Democratic Leadership Council, that very much wants to be in the pockets of the big multinational corporations. I mean, it was birthed out of that. And so you're going to have Democrats like Evan Bayh and Joe Lieberman and Hillary Clinton and so on who are going to fight that tooth and nail, which is a tragedy.
Absolutely. I mean, they are just as guilty of being bought off as Republicans. But, I mean, it is our government. And
yeah.
We
need to start the mantra, John. What, you know, the idea of leadership in the United States is really a misnomer, because we don't elect leaders, we elect representatives, and you know, we don't elect kings, and we the people are the leaders in this country. And when you look back over history, all the major changes that have happened, whether it was LBJ's Great Society, or whether it was the right of women to vote, or whether it was the end of slavery, or whether it was civil rights legislation, or whatever it may be, it always started with the people, and then the so-called leaders that we elected followed the people. So John, you make a great point, and we the people need to be speaking about it to our members of Congress constantly, writing letters to the editor of newspapers about it, raising the issue, showing up at Democratic and Republican Party meetings, Green Party meetings, whatever, bringing these issues up. Publicly financed elections, absolutely good and solid. Thank you very much, John. I appreciate it. Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, what's up?
Oh, I think we ought to change the name of the Bush brothers to Bait and Switch.
Would you be a George and Jeb, you mean, or Neil?
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Well, yeah. We all know George. We'll just call him Switch.
Okay.
And the other
Jeb
brother
is Bait.
Down here, we'll name him Bait.
All right.
He doesn't work on a fishing boat either, as far as I know. But anyway.
Yeah, and George doesn't is afraid of horses, so and
right.
He lives on a so-called ranch.
Anyway, here he is borrowing money that the country doesn't have, so he can give
$2 billion a day, by the way, Armin.
So he can give big tax cuts to his contributors.
Yep.
That buy their wealth. They don't earn it. They buy it. And then here locally, guess what? Property taxes for schools and other things are going through the roof. They're going to jump at least minimum $200 per person.
In Bradenton, Florida?
Yeah,
we're seeing the same thing. We're seeing the same thing here in Portland, Oregon. The mayor yesterday is, in a public venue, was talking about how we're going to have to raise taxes if we're going to have decent schools. And
these are Republicans down here too. 90% they claim to be Republicans. So
yeah,
they can't say it's Democrats.
No. The reality is that we have an economy that's just a complete mess, and these guys have totally screwed it up. And our schools are some of the first casualties. Armin, thanks for calling and raising that. Santino in Washington D.C. Am I pronouncing it right?
Santino.
Hey, Santino, what's up?
Not much, man. Now, listen, I just want to say this is the first time I heard your show. I was going up and down the dial. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to bring up a point is, why do we have such a silent media on all of the obvious stuff, the corruption and everything else? Is it because we don't have any proof?
No, the media, by and large, the mainstream media, by and large, are silent about this because they're big multinational corporations that control them, and it works to their benefit to have people like Bush in power and, you know, the so-called moderate conservatives who are in bed with big corporations. Look at, for example, NBC. It's owned by General Electric, a huge defense contractor. War is good for business. I mean, they fired Phil Donahue from MSNBC when he was the most profitable TV program they had on that network. because he was because he came out against the war.
And let me ask you a question: how far do you think this the administration is going to hide behind the Patriot Act? You know, they're going after Google, and you know, as a serious listener, I know they're going after Howard. And yada yada yada.
Oh, they're going to hide. They're going to hide behind it, Santino. They're going to hide behind it as long as they can, and they're going to try and make it even more aggressive. In fact, I understand that there's a provision in the Patriot Act. We're going to get into this a little later in the program to turn the Secret Service into basically the private police force of the president, with the power to arrest Americans who didn't even, you know, who have got nothing to do with the president or being around the president. It's really scary what they're doing. Santino, thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. Ann in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Ann.
Hi, Tom. Keep up the good work. But
thank
I have an important question. Since I live in Pennsylvania, what senator do I call to say don't vote for Alito?
Well, first of all, I would call Arlen Specter and I would call Rick Santorum and just, you know, register your vote, number one, okay? It's not going to cost you anything. 888-355-3588. And then, you know, I would start going through the list of high-profile Democratic senators who are in neighboring states and in the East Coast. Frankly, I don't have a, you know, off the top of my head, you know, I pick one. I mean,
pick
three or four or five.
We're disenfranchised here. We have one who's head of the Judiciary Committee.
I know.
Who is doing everything but kissing his feet. And the other one is so sanctimonious. That, you know, and talk about a flip-flopper. I mean,
I know, but see, you've got Rick Santorum, who's in trouble politically. He's probably going to lose this election.
Oh,
Arlen Specter, who's trying to position himself as a moderate. Both those guys, I think, should be listening to people who call and say, listen, don't vote for Alito. Break with your party. I'd start there, Ann.
Well, I do that all the time, but
okay.
It doesn't seem to make any difference.
Go for it. If you've got enough time, there's 100 senators. Give them all a call. I mean, just
okay.
Go right down through the list. You can find it easily on the web. Ann, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. It's good to hear from you. We got to wrap it up here for this hour anyway. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. The place for being progressive never felt so good. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. Just following up on our conversation of the previous hour, I believe it was Ann in Pittsburgh's call. She called and said, you know, what do? I live in Pennsylvania. I've got two Republican senators, and neither one of them are going to be very receptive to hearing that they shouldn't vote for Sam Scalito. Alito. And who should I call? And one of the ever-brilliant folks in our chat room, I got to tell you, some of the smartest people in the entire the smartest radio listeners are calling into this program. That's obvious. But some of the smartest people in the entire blogosphere are hanging out in our chat room. You can get there by going to tomhartman.com and just clicking the live chat link. One of the folks in our chat room directed, I believe it was Ivy's mom, directed me to a link where somebody has actually done their homework and put together a list of the 14 senators, Democratic senators, actually, four Republicans, who are still worth calling and prioritize the link. And so I just want to share this with you real quickly, and then we're going to be speaking with Brett Bercy, again, after it's been a couple of years since we've talked to Brett, but his case just came off the Supreme Court. But first, this list, and I'll repeat it again about 20 minutes from now after we're all done with Brett and after the next commercial break. Ben Nelson of Nebraska, he's already said he's going to vote for him, but give him a call anyway. Kent Conrad, North Dakota. Kent Conrad, number two. Number three, Tim Johnson of South Dakota. Number four, Lincoln Chafee, the Republican from Rhode Island. Number five, Olympia Snowe, the Republican from Maine. Number six, Susan Collins, the Republican from Maine also. Number seven, Arlen Specter. Apparently there's some hope that Arlen Specter, the Republican from Pennsylvania, may change his mind. Number eight, Blanche Lincoln, the Democrat from Arkansas. Number 9, Mark Pryor, the Democrat from Arkansas. Number 10, Mary Landrieu, the Democrat from Louisiana. Number 11, Joe Biden, the Democrat from New Jersey. Number 12, Dianne Feinstein, Democrat from California. Number 13, Joe Lieberman, Democrat from Connecticut. And number 14, Barack Obama, the Democrat from Illinois. And you can reach all of them at the toll-free number, 888-355-3588. And just say, hey, it's time to filibuster this guy. Don't just vote no on him. Vote, you know, make a filibuster happen. Brett Bercy is with us. Hey, Brett, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Brett?
Yes.
Yeah, great to have you back on. Brett, just to give people a little background, you were on this program almost 2.5 years ago, and when you had been arrested in Columbia, South Carolina, on the charges of violating the boundaries of a restricted area during a visit by George W. Bush. Your website, you are now the director of the South, and I think you were then too, South Carolina Progressive Network. The website is S-C-P-R-O-N-E-T, S-C-Pro, like Progressive Net, like Net, .com, S-C, like South Carolina Pro, Net, .com. And Brett, tell us what happened, first of all, in October of 2002.
Well, it was George Bush's third visit to South Carolina since he'd been in office, and the previous two, as the director of this coalition of progressive organizations, it was my responsibility to set a stage for people to come and express their displeasure with Mr. Bush's policies. And in the two previous visits, we were told we couldn't be where we were. We had to go to a free speech zone that was behind the Coliseum and by the dumpsters. In both instances, we refused, and in both instances, they left us where we were. So the third visit...
Now, where were you?
Within sight of the door of...
But you were in a public area, right? On a public street.
In a public area, like within several hundred yards of the door where people could see us and the media could see us.
But you were outside?
Correct.
In a public area?
Correct.
Okay.
And in the 2002 visit, there were about 6,000 Republicans turned up for a fundraising event, and they were in line to go into an airplane hangar where he was speaking, and I had arrived and was standing there with my No War for Oil sign and was told that I couldn't be there. I had to go to the free speech zone, which in this case was a half a mile away. And I told him I was in a free speech zone called the United States of America, and I was just fine where I was, and argued with him and kept moving further away from the hangar and ended up being maybe 300 yards away across a road. And they continued to tell me I couldn't be there, I couldn't be anywhere but the free speech zone. And
now, who's the they that was telling you this?
It is the Secret Service.
Okay.
And as we've seen all over the country, the Secret Service then told the local police officer to arrest me. And a local police officer arrested me for trespassing, a state misdemeanor charge, on public property. And I happen to know that you can't arrest someone in South Carolina for trespassing on public property because it happened to me in 1969 when I was a student at the university protesting Richard Nixon's war almost at the physical same location 30-something years earlier. And so
yeah.
I'm saying, you can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And they said yes, they could. They had the guns and the badges. And I said, well, I'm not leaving. I don't think this is right. And they handcuffed me and put me in a paddy wagon and drove me around behind the hangar where I had the opportunity to see George Bush get off the Air Force One. And he went in a hangar and gave a speech. This is before the war started,
mm-hmm.
about how they hate us because we're so free.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm laying outside with my hands cuffed behind my back. And I get out of jail, spent the night in jail, got out of jail. 4 months later, the state dropped the charges, as we expected they would.
Because they had no legal basis.
Correct. And the next day, I am indicted by Strom Thurmond Jr., the U.S. attorney here in South Carolina at the time, for threats to under the statute that regulates threats to the president. And in that statute, there's a section that gives the Secret Service the authority to create restricted zones around the president. And in that statute, it says that if you enter into it knowingly and willfully refuse, you can be charged with violating this statute. And it's a federal misdemeanor. And it also says in the statute that they must be clearly posted in court and entrance restricted. Well, none of those things happened that day. I was standing in the middle of a crowd of people. They picked me out because of my sign. The arresting officer even, I said, sir, is it because of the content of my sign? He said, yes. And so I'm arrested after the fact, 4 months after the fact, by the feds, and it turns out that this is the first time this statute's ever been used. I'm the only person that's ever been arrested, the only person that's ever been prosecuted and convicted for threatening the president in this fashion. And I lost my first round in a magistrate's court where I didn't have a jury. They said that the federal rules are that if you're facing $5,000 or less in fines or 6 months in prison or less, that you can have an administrative hearing with no jury. It was the first time I found out that you could go to jail in this country without having a jury trial.
Mm.
And I was convicted, and we appealed to district court, and the appeal was upheld, with both those lower courts using words like in the trial court judge said, in this age of suicide bombers, used that term. He understood the necessity for the Secret Service to have what the district court judge then said was flexibility in enforcing the statute. Well, we showed at trial that there, it wasn't restricted. They weren't taking tickets, which is the general way they're using all over the country to get into a restricted area.
Mm-hmm.
They were taking tickets 300 or 400 yards from me. So this secure zone grew out to where I was with no posting.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court just refused last week to hear my appeal. And so my conviction stands, and it's a bad thing in that the Secret Service now has the authority, and we can anticipate they will be, using it to not just tell people they have to go to the free speech zone, or not just to use the local police to intimidate and harass people, but the Secret Service actually bringing federal charges against people they pick out of a crowd in an unmarked area.
So, Brett Bercy, any sense of what, you know, was when they rejected your case? You didn't find out, did you, which members of the Supreme Court voted in which way?
No, they say that they don't make that information available. They just said, no, we won't hear the petition.
Yeah, and in fact, I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, by and large, the schedule, the agenda for the Supreme Court, the person with the greatest voice on this is the Chief Justice.
I don't know that.
Yeah, okay.
I would suspicion that's his part of his job.
So this has now gone all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court has, for all practical purposes, decided, by rejecting your appeal, has decided that the President of the United States can decide that any public area, any distance from him that he decides, without signs, without borders, without anything, can become part of a restricted area, and anybody standing there with a sign that protests him can be sent off to jail against on federal charges of threatening the president.
That's today's reality.
Amazing. Brett Bercy, you can learn more about it on his website, South Carolina Progressive Network. It's SCPRO, as in progressive net, like network.com, SCPRONet.com. Brett Bercy, you're a great patriot. Thank you so much for being with us today, Brett.
Thanks, Tom.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I know if you could see me now, here's a surprise. I know that to have is there's magic in my eyes.
And welcome back, my friends. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, 21 minutes past the hour. Brett Bercy, by the way, said he forgot to mention that you can make tax-free donations on his website to his ongoing legal efforts and to the South Carolina Progressive Network, scpronet.org. It was org, wasn't it? No, it's .com, excuse me, scpronet.com. Looking here in the chat room, they've got it figured out here. And, yeah, .com. And, yeah, that can be done. And just to recap very, very quickly, there was a whole group of people standing several hundred yards from the hangar where George Bush was giving his speech. This was before the Iraq War, about why the terrorists hate us because they hate our freedoms. And a large group, several hundred people there, holding Bush-Cheney signs. This was in October 2002, and pro-Bush signs and pro-war signs. And Brett Bercy was standing there, the only guy with a sign that said, "No oil for war." And he alone was selected out of that group and was arrested and sat in a police car handcuffed in the back of a police car while he watched George Bush get off Air Force One and go in and give the speech about how they hate us because of our freedoms. And then he was prosecuted by Strom Thurmond Jr., the federal prosecutor there in South Carolina, for threatening the president. The law says that the Secret Service can throw up a cordon around the president and to protect him, and if you step into that area without permission, you can be arrested. And he was prosecuted under that law, and he took it all the way to the Supreme Court. And last week, in probably one of the most underreported actions by the Supreme Court, refused to hear his case, which meant that the district court, the appeals court, finding held, which was that he was convicted. So he now stands convicted of this, and now the law of the land is that George W. Bush can pick you out of a crowd, even if you're a half a mile away from where he is, and even if there's no signs or anything, can pick you out of a crowd and put you in prison for threatening the president if you have a sign that says no war for oil, or presumably any other kind of sign, but we know for sure that particular sign will do it because that's what happened with Brett Bercy. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. is with us. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, it may have been a half mile from where he was speaking, but officially they say he was within 500 feet.
He was within 500 feet of the door, of the outside door
right,
to the hangar.
Of which but, they considered their area.
Right, but there was no signs, there was nothing to define that area.
I'm just telling you what they actually said in there.
Oh, I know,
right.
I know. But it was a public area, and he was standing
right.
with hundreds of other people, and none of them were selected out.
The trick is that somebody should go to these with hidden cameras so that they can actually take videotape of what happens.
Yeah.
There is quite a bit going on, and first I want to talk a little bit about the mining hearings that are going on, and then I want to talk about Bush's two speeches today.
Sure.
The mining hearings that are happening are the appropriations, the Labor HHS Appropriations Committee, of which Senator Byrd is the ranking member, and Senator Spector is the chair, and Senator Harkin goes after the mine today and mining companies to say that you can have a tracking device for $20 per miners, but it's being used by no one. And there's also a text messaging situation that can be used by the miners. There's 15,000 mines. Only 14 mines out of those 15,000 are using it, and the cost is $750 per mine. Right now, they're getting into the situation with water and bringing water and oxygen availability.
And what do you want to bet, Ellen, that all of those mines that are using these more advanced safety devices are unionized mines?
I would bet you a lot of money on that one.
The ultimate safety device for miners is a union. And, I mean, if the Democrats don't start saying that and chanting that like a mantra, they are nuts, because that's really what it boils down to. There has been so much union busting since 1981. The United Mine Workers used to have almost 500,000 members. They now have active members in the mines, probably fewer than 30,000. They claim a membership of a couple hundred thousand now, but most of those are retired miners. Many of them are retired miners. And, I mean, they've just been wiped out. And they've been wiped out by mines declaring bankruptcy, de-unionizing themselves, and then selling themselves to another entity that just happens to be owned by the same people over and over and over again.
It is, the mining situation is unbelievable, and you do have the governor of West Virginia who is pretty upset about it, and because he knows his, you know, tail is on the line on that.
Is he a Republican or a Democrat?
I believe he's a Republican.
Yeah. See, that's he's not gonna be saying, hey, we need unions. Anyhow, we got 30 seconds here.
Well, all I want to say is that Bush is now in two speeches throwing in the kitchen sink. One, there's the annual anti-choice rally on the Hill, and secondly, Bush is making his speech that now Saddam Hussein was shooting our airplanes, and he was a state sponsor of terror, despite the fact that the movie Why We Fight has him saying that al-Qaeda had nothing to do with Saddam Hussein. And, of course, in terms of this whole issue about shooting at airplanes, we have a track. Our military correspondent watched this. There's a tracking device on when they turn on radar. We can shoot them. It's like shooting fish in a barrel with Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, yeah. And us shooting him. Yeah, not the other way around, you mean.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. He represented no threat to us. I can't believe that Bush is Well, I guess if the lie is big enough.
But if you repeat it often enough, people are going to believe it.
There you go.
If
the lie is big enough. 27 minutes past the hour. Thanks, Ellen. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
As I went walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me those golden valleys. This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back to the radio home of democracy. You're in the No Boring Zone, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Taking direct aim at Roe v. Wade, writes Hufstetter and Simon in the L.A. Times Washington Post survey service. Taking direct aim at Roe v. Wade, lawmakers from several states are proposing broad restrictions on abortion with the goal of forcing the U.S. Supreme Court soon to include a second new justice, that would be Sam Alito, or at least in their hopes, to revisit the landmark ruling issued 33 years ago last Sunday. A bill under consideration in Indiana would ban all abortions except when continuing the pregnancy would put the woman's life or physical health in danger of, quote, substantial permanent impairment, end quote. Similar legislation is pending in Ohio, Georgia, and Tennessee. The bills are in direct conflict with the Supreme Court's 1973 rulings establishing abortion as a constitutional right. Roe v. Wade and its companion case, Doe versus Bolton, asserted the doctors may consider all factors relevant to the well-being of the patient, including emotional and psychological health. In the years since, states have adopted a variety of laws designed to restrict access to abortion or compel women to think through alternatives. Those efforts are expected to continue this year. Many states are considering proposals to impose new licensing standards on abortion clinics or to require a woman seeking an abortion first to view an ultrasound image of the fetus and discuss with a counselor the pain a fetus may feel. And on it goes. But these four states, Indiana, Ohio, Georgia, and Tennessee, outlaw it altogether. Why? Because they're expecting Sam Alito to be on the Supreme Court. You can do something about preventing that from happening. Call 888-355-3588. One more time, I'll share this list of senators with you. This is the prioritized list of this of the ones who are probably the most wavering, the most likely to be persuaded if enough people call them. Number one, Ben Nelson, Democrat of Nebraska. He's already said he's going to vote for him. Still, call him up. Say, Ben, you know, I know you said that, but please. Number two, Kent Conrad, Democrat of North Dakota. Number three, Tim Johnson, Democrat of South Dakota. Number four, Lincoln Chafee, Republican of Rhode Island. Number five, Olympia Snow, Republican of Maine. Number six, Susan Collins, Republican of Maine. Number seven, Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania. Yeah, Arlen Specter on the list. Number eight, Blanche Lincoln, Democrat of Arkansas. Number nine, Mark Pryor, Democrat of Arkansas. Number 10, Mary Landrieu, Democrat of Louisiana. Number 11, Joe Biden, Democrat of New Jersey. Number 12, Dianne Feinstein. Oh, yeah, that's right. Biden is Delaware. Somebody, I got that wrong. Thank you. Joe Biden, Delaware. Dianne Feinstein, Democrat of California. Joe Lieberman, Democrat of Connecticut. And Barack Obama, Democrat of Illinois. So give them a call. Toll-free number, 1-888-355-3588. If you can't get through on that number, here's another toll-free number you can try. In fact, I'll give you two other toll-free numbers you can try. One is 1-888-818-6641. That's 818-6641. Or, well, this one I know doesn't work anymore. So, yeah, try one of those two numbers, 355-3588. Well, the other one I was going to give you, I know they disconnected during the Roberts hearings because we kept giving it out on the air, and it was the SOB number. It no longer works. So, c'est la vie. I had mentioned, and I want to get to, in fact, I'm going to do it right now. And then we'll get to your phone calls. This Osama bin Laden tape. Last week I shared with you the contents of this tape from Osama bin Laden. And I've been telling you for some time, I think the guy's dead. I think he died at Tora Bora, or more or less around that time. I think specifically at Tora Bora. And, in fact, his death was reported in the Egyptian newspapers, in the mainstream publications in Pakistan and Egypt and other places around the Middle East. And, you know, people who were witnesses to it, who were there at his grave, all that sort of thing. And he's basically not reappeared since then. And the appearances he has made have been very suspicious. You know, a week before the 2004 election, saying things that seem they would be very helpful to George W. Bush. And then this tape that came out last week. Now, the conspiracy theory take on this is that the Bushies did this because Bush has got his back against the wall. He's, you know, being slammed for illegally spying on Americans, you know, yada, yada, yada. But this professor from Duke University has a slightly different take on it. It makes a lot of sense to me. Keep in mind, there have been, if you've been watching the news carefully over the last week or so, ever since we blew up that home, or I guess it was two or three homes, in this little town in the Pakistani-Afghan border, in Pakistan, there have been virtually riots throughout Pakistan. And Musharraf is taking all kinds of heat. The dictator of Pakistan, the guy who overthrew the democratically elected president of Pakistan, the military dictator who overthrew them and who is now the Bush administration ally, he's been taking a lot of heat from his people for allowing the CIA to do this. And these stories have been coming out, oh, no, no, we got his number one bomb maker. And then the next day it's, oh, no, 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 we got the number three guy in Al-Qaeda. And no, we got so-and-so's father-in-law or brother. Well, earlier today, it came out of Pakistan. You didn't get anybody. But and in fact, most of these names have been reported heavily in the American press, and the administration certainly jumping on them, but they're coming out of the Pakistani Secret Service, the ISI. Now, why would they be doing this? Because Musharraf is taking all this heat. He's being slammed for this stuff. And so, first of all, they tried justifying it. Today they came out and said that they're publicly saying that America can't do this anymore. He's trying to ramp down the heat. And this Bruce Lawrence, a professor at Duke University, is of the opinion that this Osama tape that just came out was cobbled together from previous speeches that Osama and talks and whatnot that Osama had given by the Pakistani Secret Service, not by the Bush administration, but by the Pakistani Secret Service, to try and take the heat off Musharraf and Pakistan. I find that interesting. And he says he's got a pretty good reason. This is the guy who he just finished publishing a book called Messages to the World, The Statements of Osama Bin Laden. He has translated Bin Laden's writing. He has recently analyzed more than 20 complete speeches and interviews with the Al-Qaeda leader for this book. And he says this new message couldn't possibly be directly from a living Osama bin Laden, even if it's his voice, because it's missing things. For one thing, he says there's nothing in it from the Quran. Osama bin Laden, whenever he speaks, at some point in his speech, justifies what he's doing by quoting the Quran. Nothing from that in this. No quotation from the Quran in this excerpt. You heard the whole thing on Friday if you were listening around this time. No reference to specific events. He talks about what you saw in the capitals of Europe. Remember that? And everybody, all the bloviators, all the talking heads are going, he's talking about the attacks in London and Spain. Well, if this was a tape from 3 years ago, before we invaded Iraq, but after we had invaded Afghanistan, or even before we invaded Afghanistan, it could have been that he was talking about the largest peace demonstrations in the history of the world in the capitals of Europe. The article goes on to say, this is from ABC News. While the CIA confirms the voice on the tape is bin Laden's, Lawrence questions when it was recorded. He says the timing of its release could be to divert attention from last week's U.S. airstrike in Pakistan. The strike targeted bin Laden's deputy, Ayman al-Zawahiri, and killed four leading al-Qaeda figures along with civilians, or at least that's, you know, what ABC News says. Lawrence believes faulty Pakistani intelligence led to the strike and the civilian deaths, and the tape was leaked by Pakistani officials to divert attention from their mistake. It led to a failed military operation where America got blamed, but the people who are really to blame are the ones who provided the intelligence, Lawrence said. He said, I think this is an effort to say we're not going to look at this terrible incident that happened. Another element that Lawrence takes issue with in bin Laden's latest tape is its length. It's only 10 minutes. Previously, the shortest speech from bin Laden was 18 minutes. So nothing from the Quran, no specific reference to specific events, no reference to past atrocities on the part of the United States or Iraq or Al-Qaeda. And it just, I agree. I'm back to thinking the guy's dead. Yeah, I am convinced. I'm back to it. So we're going to have to take a break here in just a minute. We'll come back with your phone calls. One more time, this is really worth it. Give you a quick list of senators. Nelson of Nebraska, Conrad of North Dakota, Johnson of South Dakota, Chafee of Rhode Island, Snow of Maine, Collins of Maine, Specter of Pennsylvania, believe it or not, Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, Mark Pryor of Arkansas, Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, Biden of Delaware, Feinstein of California, Lieberman of Connecticut, and Barack Obama from Illinois. These seem to be, you know, according to some folks who are doing the research here, these seem to be the top 14 senators who are still on the fence. And you can call them at 1-888-1-888-355-3588, toll-free, or 1-888-818-6641. 888-818-6641. And just ask for Nelson, Conrad, Johnson, Chafee, Snow, Collins, Specter, Lincoln, Pryor, Landrieu, Biden, Feinstein, Lieberman, or Obama as a good starting point. It's 45 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program. We're in the Darwinian world of ideas. We're at the top of the food chain. Be right back.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
It's a beautiful day.
Truth and Broadcasting. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program. Time for a rush alert.
Your condescending crimes, making money, selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts. I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm a sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic cuss.
And now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this, they always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am. That's right.
You're being scared.
I'm a Nazi.
Our Rush alert.
Don't care about the middle class.
I'm a fat conservative butthead with a face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative butthead.
Hey.
With a face of a horse's ass.
Yeah, there we go. Our Rush Alert music for the day.
Let me say that each and every day, I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob.
Yeah, well, we're just going to pause that first, and we'll play the actual Rush clip. This what Limbaugh had to say about the Maryland law, which says that a corporation with more than 10,000 employees must pay 8% of its payroll for health care. 8% of its payroll for health care. There's only 5 corporations in Maryland that have more than 10,000 employees. 4 of them are already paying more than 8% of their income of their payroll for health care. The only one that isn't is Walmart. And so here's Rush Limbaugh on that topic.
This we've talked about this at great length on this program. This is nothing else. It's nothing other than a government-sanctioned rape. This is a government-sanctioned rape of an American business.
There you go. Indeed.
Condescending crimes, making money, selling lies.
Our Rush alert for the day. Yes, indeed. What can I say? I don't know. In fact, speaking of Rush alerts, hey, Whit in Scottsdale, Arizona. What's up, Whit?
Hey, the show that I have a sense of humor. Last week, somebody asked you how to say something in German. So can you tell me how one says I support George Bush in German? Go ahead. I'd like to hear you say it.
I honestly don't know how to say that.
Hail Bush. Don't you have a sense of humor or any quick
Oh, list? Heil Bush, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very good.
Okay, that would be Hail Bush. Okay. Yeah. All righty. Yeah, so was
I'm
that what you called about with?
Last week I wanted to call and ask you, but since I guess you didn't want to share any conservatives' opinions or beliefs, I was denied getting access to your airwaves. But you said something that I didn't...
Well, hang on just a second, Whit. If you ever call, and you know, anytime anybody calls and says that they want to disagree with me, they're welcome to get on the air. If however, you are swearing at our screeners, then...
I have swore at Zach, I believe is his name. I'm guessing his name is
it's
Zach.
Daniel, actually, who answers the phone there.
What's his name?
Yeah, Dan.
Dan actually denied me access to your airwaves, so yes, I cussed back. But I apologize for that, and I'm willing to say that on the air to all your listeners that
what's your point here?
Conscience. My point is you said something that was quite, not impolitic, but I want to say insane, because you said that John Forbes Hines Kerry really won the popular vote by 5 million votes.
Well, that's what the exit polls said. That's what I'm quoting, the exit polls.
What exit poll? And by the way...
The exit polls done by Mitofsky and Edison, nationwide.
That's a swing. According to the U.S. government, George Bush won the popular vote by, like, over 3 million votes, right? According to the U.S. government, not an exit poll, the U.S. government, right?
Yep.
Now, if what you're saying indeed is true, that actually some 10% of the voting electorate... voted more.
There's something in between 5 and 8 million missing votes.
Instead of George Bush, and then that really John Forbes Hines Kerry should be president of the United States and not heir dictator Bush.
Yep.
Why does not anybody other than Air America Radio divulge that as being true? Because if it really were true, I think that more than just your radio station.
Wait, I would suggest
the New York Times, I think CBS, NBC, and ABC, and PBS would ride that like they would if George Bush really was Hitler. They'd ride it on the news top story every day.
Boy, Whit, I really wish you were right. I got to say, I really wish you were right. But I recommend that you go to your local bookstore or go to any online bookstore, Powell's, Amazon, whatever, and pick up a copy of John Conyers, you know, the congressman from Detroit. A little book he wrote. It's only 120 pages. You can read it in an afternoon. It's called What Went Wrong in Ohio. Or pick up Mark Crispin Miller's book, Fooled Again. If you want to just have it all laid out in nice, clean, tidy, very easy to read format, either one of those books will give you a great start. And just, you know, make up your own mind. But do so after you've checked out a little bit of the evidence. Guy in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And thanks for calling, Whit, by the way. I look forward to talking with you again. Guy in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Hey, Guy, what's on your mind?
Well, you know, one of the things that's disturbing to me, being an investment manager, and I've been on Bloomberg Television on numerous occasions on this subject that everybody seems to kind of sweep under the rug, is when he made that pivotal decision to go in and invade Iraq, you know, military think tanks inside and outside the Pentagon and you know, very strong advisors told him that if he didn't have success in 6 months on a military operation, two very far-reaching ramifications of global proportions negatively were going to take place. One was he was going to imbalance the Middle East, which was already in a precarious position because of, you know, Palestine and Israel. And secondly, most importantly economically, was he was going to destabilize the oil.
Right, and therefore the Saudi royal family was going to go from hanging on by their fingernails economically. They were actually borrowing money to maintain their lifestyle from the IMF. They were going to go from borrowing to actually being incredibly profitable. And who is the largest lifetime patron of the Bush family? The Saudi royal family, over $1 billion.
It's unbelievable, though. You know, I mean, I just can't believe it. I mean, I'm watching, I'm seeing him on the stump today in Kansas State. I can't believe he gets one applause. And then the other issue I wanted to bring up, but the economic, you know, implications of tripling the price of oil. And if anybody wants to verify it, if you go back and you look at where oil was, which was right around $26 a barrel.
Oh yeah, when he came into office, and gas was, you know, here in Portland, gas was a buck a gallon. I mean, that's I'm sorry we're out of time. I appreciate the call, though, and thank you very much for listening and calling. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where reason is our lifestyle choice. Coming up next, we're going to have Carolyn Johnson, Paul Waldman, Arlie Shark. It's a fascinating bunch, and your calls. We'll be back.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, my friend. 6 minutes past the hour of the Tom Hartman radio program, where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Or at least one cycle of clean elections. Wouldn't that be nice? Jason in Tupelo, Mississippi on the line. Hey, Jason, welcome to the program. Thanks for calling.
How you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
I'm just sort of furious at the fact that a three-month-old warning is supposed to, get us out of the Abramoff scandal or something like that. And it's just so obvious that...
You're talking about the Bin Laden tape?
Yeah, even if it...
Yeah, I think it's 3 years old, frankly, but yeah.
Yeah, even if it is a doctored tape, the fact that the warning's 3 months old makes it really obviously, cut the adverb there, it's just sort of ridiculous that, we get that information. I'm sure warnings come in all the time, but we get a Bin Laden warning, it's already two and a half months old when it comes out, and it just happens to come out when, Abramoff is going crazy, McClellan. He's going to have to retire soon because, his time's up. They're going to have to get a new, press secretary because he can't defend himself anymore. The press is no longer, they're standing up and arguing with him.
Yeah.
And
I have a feeling they're going to stand up and argue with anybody. I think that what has happened is that the administration is losing their power over the press.
They're starting to, but what I don't see is, we saw Lewinsky hugging Clinton about 1,000 times.
Oh, only 1,000?
Yeah, and we haven't seen, I mean, I'm still waiting on that, the important Times photo of Abramoff and Bush together. I'm sure there's
right.
a picture of them kissing cheeks,
yeah.
Passing a check in their hands, maybe. If they
well, we know Abramoff raised $100,000 for him because he was a pioneer.
Oh, yeah, and it just saddens me that is not on the airwaves.
Yeah,
I
agree with you, Jason.
Nobody's covering it. It's nowhere to be found. I mean,
yeah.
You had an earlier caller talking about, CBS News should be, showing it day and night, but they keep skipping it. I don't know.
No, well, see, the reason why is very simple. It doesn't involve sex, and that's the tragedy of infotainment. We don't have news in this country anymore. We have infotainment. If it's about sex, it gets on. If it's not, it doesn't. Jason, I got to move along. Thanks a lot for the call.
All right,
though. I appreciate it. Tom in Eureka, California, you called Feinstein's office?
Yeah, hi. I think your urging people to make those calls might be having some success. I called Feinstein's office, and the staffer who answered the phone said that she is voting no on the confirmation.
Oh, good. That's great. Good to hear. Okay, Tom, thank you very much.
Thanks
for that information, and thanks for making the call. That's
You're welcome.
Great. Carolyn Jacobson is with us. She is the director of the Coalition of Labor Union Women's? Carolyn, help me out here.
Coalition of Labor Union Women's Cervical Cancer Prevention Project.
Ah, okay.
It's called Cervical Cancer Prevention Works.
Uh-huh. CLUW stands for?
Coalition of Labor Union Women.
Okay, there
and
you go.
It's been around since 1974.
Great. The acronym, I'm sorry, I didn't have it spelled out next to it, and it wasn't making sense.
Okay.
And the cervical cancer prevention, are you talking about the virus HPV, the human papillomavirus, and the vaccine now that prevents this virus?
Our project is focusing on informing union women that HPV causes cervical cancer. Can cause cervical cancer, and the number one risk to getting cervical cancer is not being screened. But as you know, there is a vaccine that is now before the FDA, and at some point in time, we're hoping that the vaccine will be approved for all young women and men so that we can get rid of cervical cancer, because cervical cancer is the only cancer that actually is preventable, and we know what causes it.
So we really have two issues here. The first is that women can go in and be tested to find out if they're infected with this virus. And if they are, then they know that they're at higher risk for developing cervical cancer, and so they should have more frequent pap tests, for example.
Right? There's a low-risk HPV and a high-risk HPV, and those that are found to have the high-risk HPV are monitored very closely, or if in fact There's a imminent problem. There is a procedure that will take care of the HPV, and they don't have to worry about getting cervical cancer.
Now, a friend of mine who is a man recently got cancer of the tonsils and was and had to go through the whole thing of surgery and radiation and chemo, and was told that it was an HPV infection that caused that tonsil cancer. Does this cause cancer in other parts of the body? And if so, should people is it a blood check that just tests the whole body or what?
The HPV test is actually a test on the cervix. I'm not a medical expert, and I can't tell you about the getting the tonsils cancer, but I can tell you that cervical cancer is caused by the HPV virus, high-risk HPV virus, which is transmitted sexually or from skin to skin. So that's what
yeah,
I can
okay.
tell you.
And now, at the same time, there is a vaccine that if a girl or young woman gets this vaccine before she's had any kind of sexual activity, before she's been exposed to this virus, it will prevent her from ever getting cancer as a consequence of coming into contact with the virus. And there is a whole organized right-wing bunch out there trying to prevent this vaccine from becoming available as part of the, I would say, the war against sex in America.
I don't get it. The American Cancer Society tells us the vaccine could prevent at least 70% of the deaths from cervical cancer. And now there are about 250,000 deaths each year worldwide from the cancer, most of these deaths in developing countries. In the U.S., it's minority women who have the highest incidence of cervical cancer, Latinas followed by African-American women and Asian women and Pacific Islander women. And this vaccine is going to greatly aid these women who are the hardest hit by the virus. So I really don't get it. And what's being proposed now before the FDA is a classic public health model in terms of the vaccine. You immunize the vast majority of the population in order to obliterate the virus. And basically,
and then the virus isn't floating around anymore.
What?
You know, it's like doing away with polio.
You got it.
But what we have is the religious right. You know, the Justice Sunday crowd saying that they don't want young women to have access to this vaccine because then they'll think that they can have sex without having to worry about getting cancer. I think, that, you know, it's more like, you know, be frightened. And yet most women who are exposed to this, not most women, but many women who are exposed to this virus could be exposed on the evening of their marriage. I mean, they could literally, that could be the first time they ever have sex. If their husband has had sex with anybody before and is carrying the virus, bingo, they get it. I mean, why?
You are absolutely on target. This is a cancer that does not discriminate. And as far as I'm concerned, again, I don't get it. It's just like if you have your tetanus shot, you know, I mean, their argument goes along these lines that, you know, if you get a tetanus shot, you're going to go out and deliberately step on a rusty nail. And then, therefore, you should be punished.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. And basically, the bottom line on this is that we're, you know, hoping to prevent cervical cancer. There's a test. There's an HPV test that's available for women over 30 so that they can find out if, in fact, they have the HPV virus, the high-risk HPV virus that can lead to cervical cancer.
And they should simply go to their doctor and say, I'd like to be tested for
cervical
cancer. You got
it. That's
HPV
exactly
virus.
Right. And most health insurance plans now cover the HPV test. Women under 30, the protocol is to just have that regular Pap test.
Now, a real quick question, Carolyn Jacobson of CLUW.org. We only have a little less than a minute left. If a woman goes to her doctor and she gets the test and the test comes back positive, does that mean that the insurance company will then say, let's say a year later she develops cervical cancer and now she's looking at $250,000 in medical bills, will the insurance company then say this is a pre-existing condition, we're not going to cover it?
I'm not a medical expert. I don't know the answer to that question.
It would be something worth looking into because they play these kind of games all the time. People who have hepatitis C, for example, and then develop liver cancer, a lot of the insurance companies will say, sorry, you know, we know hep C is a pre-existing condition and it leads to liver cancer, so you're toast. You're not going to be covered.
Right. Well, we're pushing to make sure that all insurance companies, particularly those that cover union women, which is my audience, basically provide the HPV coverage, and more of the insurance companies are providing it. In some cases, however, women just need to ask, because unfortunately, not all doctors are up to speed necessarily, and it's really important for women to know about this and follow through.
I agree. Carolyn Jacobson of CLUW.org, and I would say I'm not ever in favor of health insurance fraud, but if I had any concern that my health insurance company might find out about the virus and then, you know, not protect me against cancer, I would pay cash to have the thing done and give a phony name. But in any case, Carolyn Jacobson, thanks so much for being with us. I appreciate it. 16 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back.
If I had a hammer, I'd a hammer in the morning.
Yeah, it gets a little poignant when you think about what's going on in the mines. These guys with hammers and coal. Anyhow, it's so funny. In our chat room, which you can get to by going to TomHartman.com and clicking live chat, Republicans rule the world, in all caps. Bush is the bravest president we've had since Bush Sr. was in charge, and we've kicked some Saddam in 91 when we answered the call, and we do everything, you know, like that. And so somebody else takes the name Bush fan, and he says, Bush is so brave, he saved Texas from the Viet Cong all by himself. Oh, I love it. I love it. Yes. If you had... You yellow-bellied commies on welfare is the real problem in this great country. If you had jobs, you wouldn't have time to be traitors. It's worth the humor value. I got to tell you, you got to go see it. 1-866-440-8466, our telephone number. Jay in Bainbridge Island, Washington. Hey, Jay, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for you. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I thought it would be interesting to everyone, all your listeners. I live in the Seattle area, and every Sunday for years we've had a section of a magazine section called Parade.
I have it in front of me. I was going to get to it today. The 10 worst dictators in the world.
Right. I was really taken with some of the similarities of our White House administration.
Well, the interesting thing is that several of these worst dictators in the world are allies of the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you've got, let's see, King Abdullah, number 7, last year's ranked number 5, King of Saudi Arabia. And they go on there, by law, all Saudi citizens must be Muslim. Police in Saudi Arabia routinely use torture. Saudi women may not appear in public with a man who isn't a relative, must cover their bodies and faces in public, and may not drive. The strict suppression of women is not voluntary, and the Saudi women who would like to live a freer life are not allowed to do so. You know, so you've got him, and then, let's see, number 10, I think, was...
Well, there were 10 that they gave a little bio on, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and, well, Burma, he's not our buddy. Oh, Sudan, yeah, we're kind of putting up with him. He's the number one guy, Omar al-Bashir.
Right, well, what's Karimov in Uzbekistan? That was our buddy for
there you go, and Hu Jintao in China. That was the other one that got me.
Yeah.
Number 6, the worst dictator in the world, is Hu Jintao, the dictator of China. Which is where, you know, most of our stuff is made.
Right.
I mean, you know, our missiles are made there. Our uniforms are made there. And they go on and they say the government opens and censors mail, monitors phone calls, faxes, email, and text messages. 400,000 residents of Beijing have been forcibly evicted from their homes in preparation for the 2008 Olympics. Less than 5% of criminal trials include witnesses. Conviction rate, 99.7%. A quarter million people being held as dissidents in re-education through labor camps without trial.
Right. Torture is the main source of intelligence.
Yep, yep. And this is the country that, you know, that Walmart and all these guys, they all hold up and say, yeah, this is wonderful. It's just wonderful.
Right.
Yeah, thanks for pointing that out, Jay. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you, and thank you for the call.
Thank you.
Dave in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Dave, what's on your mind today?
Tom, to those who don't believe this country to be the victim of election fraud, I want to ask a few questions. One, why would the Republicans insist on having voting machines that can be accessed by modem and which leave no record? Why would they want to have such a machine? Why would they block all efforts to make these machines made verifiable? anybody that introduces a bill like that, it's not going to make it to a vote.
Well, Rush Holds has had a bill like that before Congress since 2000.
So I asked them, why do you think that the Republicans are doing that? And the only obvious answer I can come up with, and I don't know why more of the senators and congressmen haven't come up with it, is they fully intend to use them to rig the elections.
Well, actually, the answer that the senators and congressmen will give you when you ask that question is that the reason why the Republicans don't want to have regulation of the voting machine companies is because the voting machine companies are big corporate contributors to the Republicans, and it's all about profit.
And at least one of them promised to deliver the election for Bush.
Yeah, Wally O'Dell of Diebold, although he's now left Diebold. But yeah. But that's the rationale, and tragically, I think a number of Democrats have believed that rationale, and it doesn't wash with me, I'm sorry.
How do little precincts with a couple hundred registered voters deliver 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 votes to the Republicans? And then they want to recount? There's nothing to be recounted. There's no way to recount.
Yeah.
There is
yeah.
no paper.
No, this is where I say, you know, go read Mark Crispin Miller's book, Fooled Again. It is just so important.
Well, but I've been fighting this one a long time, Tom, as you well know.
Yeah, I do, Dave, and I appreciate it. I got to move along here. Wendy, we have just a little less than a minute left. What's up? Wendy in Woodby Island, Washington.
Thank you. I request that we all speak in the affirmative as though Alito is not elected. He is not going to be elected rather than...
You mean not confirmed.
Exactly.
Yeah. It is definitely not a sure thing. And, in fact, it's a growing probability in my mind that there's going to be a filibuster. And the more people who call 1-888-355-3588 and tell their senators or any of these other senators who I've named here, just pick one, but Nelson, Conrad, Johnson, Chafee, Snow, Collins, Specter, Lincoln, Pryor, Landrieu, Biden, Feinstein, Lieberman, and Obama, tell them, hey, you know, you can take Feinstein off. She's already said she's not going to vote for him. And, just let them know. And Nelson actually has said he's going to vote for him. And I would encourage people to call Ben Nelson and say, Senator Nelson, please do not, you know, not only desert your party, but do not desert the United States of America.
Why should we not call Feinstein with the same attitude?
Well, because Feinstein has said she's going to vote against him.
But so has Nelson.
No. Nelson said he's going to vote for him.
It.
Yeah. Thanks a lot, Wendy. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back for your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 34 minutes past the hour. And we're going to take a look now at the best of the rest of the news, what's been happening over the last week, what's over the weekend, what's been coming up, and what might be happening in the week as we come into it here. We have with us Paul Waldman, senior fellow with Media Matters, MediaMatters.org, and Arlie Shard, president of Environmental Media Services, EMS.org. And Paul, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hey, Paul. Great to have you here. And
Arlie,
thank you. And Arlie, welcome to the program also.
Welcome, Arlie, too. Okay.
Arlie?
Yeah.
Okay. Paul?
R-L-I-E.
Yeah. Okay. I can't hear Paul, though.
I thought you were saying that Arlie was Paul. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Well, glad to have you both with us. Let me start with Paul from Paul Waldman from MediaMatters.org. Paul, what do you see as the biggest story happening right now, and you know, reported or unreported by the mainstream media? Paul Waldman?
Yes.
What do you see as the biggest story right now, reported or unreported by the mainstream media?
Well, I think the biggest story has to be the fact that the Bush administration is now essentially declaring that George W. Bush is a king. I mean, if you look at the kinds of justifications that they're offering for this NSA spying scandal, it's really, truly breathtaking. I mean, they have said explicitly that the president has the power to do whatever he wants, no matter what laws Congress passes, no matter what the judicial branch says, that if in the area of national security, if he finds the law inconvenient, then he can break it. I think that that's something that, despite the fact that we have been talking about this and there has been media attention to it, has not gotten nearly the attention that it warrants.
Now, he's doing a PR tour right now, Paul Waldman, senior fellow with MediaMatters.org. He's going to the NSA later this week. He's just, you know, doing the full press, full court press here in advance of congressional hearings into this by his own party, being supervised by his own party, I might add. He used this strategy to sell us on a war that was totally bogus, we've discovered in retrospect. He's used this strategy to sell us on a variety of things, from No Child Left Behind to a flawed Medicare package. Do you think he's going to be successful in using this strategy to either to cow Congress or to convince the American people that maybe we should just let him be king?
Well, to be honest, I think a lot of it depends on the Democrats. One of the things that they're counting on is that the Democrats will, as they often do in these kinds of situations, start running scared.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe that they can just drum up the issue of national security and say that Democrats don't care about defending America and that they're weak and that they're vaguely traitorous. And when they do that, the Democrats will become frightened and, you know, be like turtles sinking into their shells. So I think if the Democrats do, if they respond in the way that they sometimes have, then the White House can be successful. But if the Democrats stand up to them and understand how exactly they need to frame this issue, then it won't work. It doesn't always, just because the president goes out and makes a bunch of speeches doesn't necessarily mean he can convince the country of what he wants to.
Right, didn't work with Social Security.
Exactly. What he wanted to convince the country of was something that they weren't buying. And the problem here is you have a battle of two different kind of frames. What the Republicans want people to think is that this is about whether or not we're going to go after terrorists. And they want people to believe that Republicans want to go after terrorists and Democrats don't want to go after terrorists. What Democrats have to do is say that we all agree that we should go after terrorists, but this is about whether or not George W. Bush has the power to break the law. That's the question here. You know, the NSA spied on suspects before George Bush came to office, and they've continued to spy on suspects. But when we had presidents who obey the law, they did it by getting a warrant, as the law requires. What the Bush administration is saying is that if they don't like the law, they don't have to obey the law. That didn't work for Richard Nixon, and the Democrats shouldn't allow it to work for George W. Bush.
Well said, Paul Waldman. Arlie Schart, the president of the Environmental Media Services, EMS.org. Arlie, what do you see as the major story of the moment?
Well, Tom, as you know, there's been an
Arlie, if you're on a speakerphone, if you could pick it up, I'd appreciate it.
Oh, sure. As you know, there's been just an unending stream of assaults on the environment and on public health ever since Bush came into office. But I'd say that the most important thing happening right now is the nomination of Judge Alito to be a justice on the Supreme Court. Last week, or the week before, rather, nine major national environmental groups, as well as the Endangered Species Coalition, came out strongly against Judge Alito, and they are working very, very hard right now to try to block the passage of his nomination. There's a couple of reasons for that. Alito has a terrible record on environmental cases, and it happens that there are going to be two major cases that are going to be decided by this summer by the court. There are cases that are coming up for hearings pretty soon, and the court will decide them by this spring. And the court, it has the potential to literally wipe out the Clean Water Act if Alito rules on these cases the way he has ruled in past cases as a judge on the Third Circuit.
Well, and if you add that to John Roberts' rulings when he was a circuit court judge on, for example, the Endangered Species Act, where he ruled
yep.
that a toad in California had no legal protection because it didn't engage in interstate commerce.
That's right.
And therefore wasn't covered by the Commerce Clause of the Constitution. I mean, you know, we're getting crackpot on top of crackpot here on the Supreme Court.
Well, the scary thing about Alito is that his record shows that he doesn't believe that the average citizen has a right to have to make an appearance in court. In one of the cases that he decided in the Third Circuit, he ruled against a citizens group that was suing a chemical company because they polluted a river in New Jersey, and the trial court found that the name of the company is Magnesium Electron, that they had violated the Clean Water Act over 150 times. And yet Alito overruled the district court, which had ruled in favor of the citizen group, and in a 2-1 decision, they overturned the court on the ground that the citizens group, U.S. PERG, lacked standing to sue. And he's got a long record in all kinds of, in workers' rights, women's rights, civil rights, and everything.
We the people essentially have
for
no
a powerful
rights.
Institution over individual citizens.
Yeah. Paul Waldman, senior fellow with Media Matters at MediaMatters.org. I'm wondering what your take is on Arlie's suggestion that this is, you know, certainly one of the biggest stories of the day, and where you think this is going to go. I'm starting to hear back now from senators that we're hearing more and more say they're definitely going to vote against Alito. I haven't heard a good, strong, positive statement that there's going to be a filibuster.
No, and right now there's only one Democrat, Ben Nelson of Nebraska, who's actually come out and said he's going to vote for him. He may get a couple of other votes from Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's there's only also one Republican senator who's even said he's considering voting against him, and that's Lincoln Chafee of Rhode Island. So it's conceivable that almost every Democrat will vote against him and almost every Republican will vote for him, and he'll win just on that near party line vote. I think the Democrats seem to be a little wary of mounting a filibuster because they feel as though they might not that it's probably not going to succeed, and in the end it won't do them much good.
Well, all they need is 40 votes.
Yes, that's true. But the question is, there may be a few senators who are willing to vote against Alito, but don't really want to support a filibuster.
We don't know about that yet.
That's from people from the Gang of 14. We're just not sure. They haven't made statements to that effect. But I think, you know, part of the problem is that the Democrats may have lost this battle already. We got kind of lost in the weeds with the Alito nomination about these questions about the concerned alumni of Princeton and, you know, this Vanguard case where he should have recused himself but didn't. And I think that they didn't do as good a job as they could have of really setting out for the country the reasons why they really feel that this nomination is a dangerous one and is going to take America backward. We could have had that discussion, but we didn't have it because, in part, we got so caught up in these things that didn't really mean a lot to the American people.
What do you see, Paul Waldman, MediaMatters.org, as the biggest story coming down the road?
Well, there are always. I think this the spying scandal is going to continue to be a big story. One thing that we're working on today, I can tell you, is and this relates to one of the main critiques that we have of the media, is that they allow misinformation and lies to pass through. Karl Rove said the other day this spy scandal, I think, is going to have to be a big story. There are going to be these hearings, and we hope that they will actually be revealing of something. Unfortunately, it looks like this is not the kind of scandal that will get the same sort of attention that, say, a president having an affair with an intern would.
Right.
If things go as they should and if the Democrats can be united on this, perhaps this will be something that will really make people take a good, close look at what kind of government this administration wants.
Well, let's hope so, Paul Wald. Arlie Shark, do your thoughts on what's coming down the road here with ENS.org?
Yeah, there's going to be a tremendous battle coming up that was started last year by an extreme right-wing Republican from California named Richard Pombo, who has got a bill that's designed to literally eviscerate the Endangered Species Act, and that's pretty much the cornerstone of the whole network of laws that support public health and environmental protection. And Pombo has made got a bill before the Congress now that would just cut the legs out from under the whole thing.
He's probably the most environmentally hostile member of the United States Congress, don't you think?
Pardon me?
Wouldn't you say Richard Pombo is probably the single most environmentally hostile member?
He's got a lot of company.
Oh, really?
You've got
Ted Stevens in there.
Senator from Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I'm going blank here. He's chair of the House Natural Resources Committee, and he says global warming is a hoax and so on. And I don't know why I'm blanking out on this.
It's in office, isn't it? Yeah. These are serious issues that we need to be watching very closely. Arlie Shart, president of Environmental Media Services, EMS.org. Paul Waldman, senior fellow with Media Matters, MediaMatters.org. Gentlemen, both, thank you so much for being with us today.
Sharing
your thoughts and expertise.
Thanks. Bye, Paul.
Have a good one. 45 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Radio Program.
Over the power of web conferencing with GoToMeeting.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
When sundown pales the sky, I want to hide a while.
behind your smile, and everywhere I'd look, your eyes would find.
Ah, good old Donovan. It is Donovan, isn't it? Indeed, yeah. Welcome back, my friends. I actually saw him live once. It was actually a very good concert. Welcome back, my friends. 9 minutes before the hour on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States of America. In a ceremony that began with a prayer and ended with tears, the U.S. Naval Academy sent its Marine sentries off to war yesterday, ending a 155-year tradition at the school because of the demand for combat troops. Pray for them, for many are going into harm's way, a chaplain said at an invocation as the 4 dozen Marines, scarcely older than the midshipmen they guard, stood in quiet formation behind him. Since the Civil War, this is from today's Washington Post, just came out, and thanks to Klan in the chat room for this. Since before the Civil War, Marine sentries have provided security for dignitaries' visits and special events on the Annapolis campus. They've also performed largely ceremonial duties, including standing guard at John Paul Jones's crypt and the Academy's museum. However, now, not going to do that. They're sending them off to war. I'm telling you, when John Murtha said that George W. Bush broke the military, he was spot on right. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. Charles in San Diego, California. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Hello.
Hey, you're on the air.
I was just going to comment that I think we shouldn't complain when Alito gets put into the Supreme Court.
Why not?
Well, because
first of all, you're assuming it's happening. I'm not making that assumption yet. But let's say if it happens,
I'll even give it as a given. And the idea is that sometimes we liberals, Democrats, and advanced thinkers just need a kick in the butt. I mean, we have allowed in the last 6 years the worst to occur, and I don't see us actually getting even more organized than what it should be. We've actually seen the military. I've been in the military 12 years, and in the last 4 or 5 years, my experience is that it's just getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
And now I can see that also with the Supreme Court in South Dakota now trying to pass a law to outlaw abortion altogether. And
4 states actually doing it right now in anticipation of Alito getting on the bench and knocking down Roe v. Wade.
So I tell you what, maybe we need to get what maybe we deserve it.
Yeah, well, it's Charles. I'm not quite that pessimistic, and I still think that there's hope, and I'm willing to fight
hope.
This.
They can't
you know?
Kill hope.
Yeah, there you go.
They're trying to find out, but they can't kill hope.
There you go.
Sometimes you need a firestorm to get people activated. And
I don't disagree with you, Charles. I just think that we've had enough already. I've had enough already. I got to tell you, I've had enough already, and I don't think that we need to go back to the days of the Lochner Court, the 1905 court that struck down maximum wage laws or maximum hour laws or minimum wage laws or child labor laws and all those kind of things. But if you're right, that's the court we're going to get, and it'll be a terrible tragedy. Thanks a lot for calling, though, Charles. Scott in San Diego, California. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind?
Good morning, Tom. Yesterday, Amy from Coronado and me volunteered to be phone screeners for the local radio show here, a liberal radio show here, the John Elliott Show.
Oh, that's great.
That was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could be in the booth screaming instead of screaming just at the radio. Oh, gosh, that was fun.
I don't know if Dan, our the guy who answers the phones there in New York for for this show, would agree with you or not.
But you know, when I'm in the studio, I can say dump this caller. Of course, the host can't hear me, but I can still say dump this caller, and I'm yelling at the radio. He's actually right in front of me.
Yeah. Well, we don't dump callers, so.
Yeah. Anyway, I called every senator on the list that you've named this morning, and I got to tell you, they must be getting a lot of phone calls, Tom. Because
great.
I get really short shrift. I mean,
yeah.
What have you got to say? And click.
Yeah, yeah.
So they must be getting flooded.
Well, let's hope so. The list, once again, Ben Nelson, Democrat of Nebraska, he's already come out and said he's going to vote for Alito. Time to tell him, change your mind, Ben. Kent Conrad, Democrat of North Dakota. Tim Johnson, Democrat of South Dakota. Lincoln Chafee, Republican of Rhode Island. Olympia Snow, Republican of Maine. Susan Collins, Republican of Maine. Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania. Blanche Lincoln, Democrat of Arkansas. Mary Pryor, Democrat of Arkansas. Mary Landrieu, Democrat of Louisiana.
That's Joe Pryor, Tom.
Say that again?
Mark Pryor.
Mark Pryor, what about him?
Well, you said Mary Pryor, it's Mark Pryor.
Oh, I'm sorry, you're right.
Arkansas.
Yeah,
and Mary Landrieu's disconnects you.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it just dumps. She must either have her voicemail full or something because I call her office and it rings and it goes click, click. dumped.
She's probably getting so many calls from constituents from New Orleans who are freaked out that this is just on top of that. Joe Biden from where's Joe Biden from? Delaware.
Delaware.
Dianne Feinstein from California, who has now said that she's going to vote against it. Now we need to call her and say, and by the way, filibuster this guy!
Yes, I called her and said that. Please filibuster. You got a lot of support.
Yeah, and Joe Lieberman, Democrat of Connecticut, and Barack Obama, Democrat of Illinois. And the message to tell these guys is, guys, I use that word in the old-fashioned, kind of generic form, is not just vote, don't vote for Alito. The message is filibuster Alito. Do everything you can. Lay down in front of a truck to stop this guy. This guy is going to destroy democracy in the United States of America. He's going to turn us into a corporatocracy. Between him, John Roberts, and Scalia, and Thomas, we will have no rights left.
There's a lot of people out here, Tom. When I talk to Dems out here, there's a lot of support for a filibuster. Yeah. All the Dems, I think, are solidly behind their senators on this case.
Well, their senators have to be made aware of that. I think that an awful lot of their senators don't know that yet. And that's why we need to be calling toll-free 888-355-3588 or 888-818-6641. Call toll-free and let any of these senators, obviously first start with your senators, give me your zip code, give me your name and address, give me your information, and let them know. Scott, thanks so much. Appreciate the call. Great to hear from you. Thanks for listening to us there in San Diego. Coming up on the next Tom Hartman program, conservative Clyde Cruz wants to deregulate telecommunications and let the free market decide. Trouble is, there's no such thing as a free market. That and more, and your calls tomorrow on the Tom Hartman program, where we run rings around the right wing every day. And if you can say that three times, you're a better man than me. Anyhow, remember, my friends, democracy, activism, begin with you. Tag, you're it.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.